Today's program has been brought to you by TechServe, New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. For more information, visit TechServe.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Well, it feels good to hear the theme song again.
Yeah, welcome back, Greg.
Thanks.
I am welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Darren Bresnitz.
The other half, your host, half a host.
Wake up!
I feel like half a host since I've been on.
Do you need a coffee?
I love a coffee. Greg Bresnitz. It's good to be back in Brooklyn. I mean, everyone's complaining about the weather, but today is gorgeous.
Oh, fuck off! You missed like the shittiest weather.
Yeah, I've been gone for a while. So what's a polar vortex?
Shut up.
It's been a good show, guys. See you later.
Well, first off, very, very happy Mother's Day to our mother, our grandmother, all of our aunts. Welcome to being the best Mother Day of all time ever.
That we're absolutely missing.
Yeah, but, I mean, we'll be, you know, look, celebrating Mother's Day on Mother's Day is amateur hour.
Yeah. My Instagram feed tells me that every day is Mother's Day.
You know, I also learned that everyone's mom is a badass.
Yeah, that's true.
We want to welcome back for, I want to say fourth year now? Is it fourth year?
Five.
Fifth year.
Yeah.
Fifth year, the one, the only, the blonde, Jordana Rothman. Welcome back.
Hi, guys.
I know we're a few months late for our...
2015 prediction.
Well, we were just talking about how this
2014.
It's morphed from a prediction show.
It's evolved. It's evolved.
It's evolved, as all of us have.
But normally we do this presidency.
Do you remember when Greg used to drag his knuckles on the ground? Now look at him.
Upright, yeah. Really, it's an evolution.
Homo erection.
You want to shout out your mom?
Yes, right after I said that.
Yeah. Hey, Mom, just tune in at like the 2:13 mark, but not a second before.
No, I think Mom's listening live.
Yeah. Mom's on her way home from Boston. But yeah, I want to shout out my mom. And you're right, it's not cool to celebrate Mother's Day on Mother's Day, which is why we're not celebrating today. But we're going to have a good time.
Yeah, we're going
another
down.
Night.
Do you know when restaurants would love you if you came in like the Monday after Mother's Day, when they're probably dead, to like blow it out?
Yeah, I mean, restaurants love me.
Not you. not you. It's the proverbial you, not Jordana
Rothman.
Oh,
it's like the royal you.
So if you guys want to hit a pause in the old podcast, you can go back last year and listen to our evolution of food show.
I wonder if the tone is going to be different this year, because normally we're in the dead of winter and everyone's sort of just like, fuck this.
I feel like it was kind of springy last year, no?
Yeah.
When was it? Yeah, it was later in the year.
So where do you want to start?
All right. Well, I have a whole bunch of stuff that I went back and looked on. All right. We can just get a few things out of the way. Ramen, still big.
Oh, did we talk about ramen last year?
We did talk about ramen.
Okay. And what did I say?
It was coming.
Okay. So that sounds like probably not a thing that I said. Yeah. We can talk about ramen. I mean, I was thinking about this the other day, actually, because I think that the sort of waves of ramen obsession in New York has kind of followed a similar trajectory as barbecue. So you had like the first, or coffee. You have like the first wave of like barbecue places a few years back with like Hill Country and Daisy Mays and places like that. And everyone got excited about barbecue. And then it kind of tapered off for a little while. And then it came back. And what I would argue was sort of like a golden age of urban barbecue with like, Delaney's place and, Hometown Barbecue and Mighty Quinn's. And I feel like that's sort of a similar pathway that ramen took. Like, you know, like a few years ago we had like Ippudo and obviously Momofuku, mm-hmm. and then the old guard places like Sapporo and places like that. And then, you know, ramen became part of our lives.
Yeah.
And then now I feel like we're sort of booming again with like new exciting stuff, including Ivan Ramen.
Ivan Ramen Slurp Shop.
Which was very exciting. I ate there the other evening and it was quite good.
I've only been to the one on the west side, which was amazing. I went twice in mm-hmm. 1 week because it was just like... But also, there's nothing to eat over there except for that that food court, which is like...
the plaza?
Which is an unbelievable solution to nothing. It's like it went from like absolute barren wasteland of like shitty Greek diners to incredible food that's open till midnight.
I mean, I think we can just say that barbecue and ramen, we don't have to put like a caveat around them anymore in New York. There's just a good amount of restaurants that serve on the level quality. You don't say urban barbecue anymore. It's just you can go out and just get barbecue and just not be a, you know, a surprise or a thing. It's
I'll be interested to see how it evolves even from here. I mean, New York City doesn't have its own distinctive style of barbecue or its own distinctive style of ramen. Right. You know,
do you think that will actually happen?
I don't know.
Would you like to eat New York style? If I was like, oh, we're serving New York style ramen.
Well, I mean, I guess the closest thing to New York style ramen would be the ramen at Dasara, which is sort of like
Jewy.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like John Brown Smokehouse out in LIC.
Yeah.
They do like foie gras and pastrami and things like that.
New York sucks if that's what we're that's what I'm saying.
It's like, why would you, like, would you really want to be like, oh yeah, this is like the New York, if like, I would just kind of run away. I'd be like, I just want something that's a little bit more authentic.
Sure. Although I think authenticity in general is sort of a moving target, but I hear you.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, at least someone that went and studied and at least knows what they're riffing off of, as opposed to just like.
But you can hang your hat on more than other subject, authentic ramen, authentic barbecue.
I think we should talk about this idea of authenticity. I'm tripping on that a little bit. I mean, ramen comes from China, you know?
Right.
I mean, from everything I've read, it sort of came into the Japanese culinary lexicon through the Chinatown in Yokohama.
But let's get off ramen, because I feel like we've talked ramen to death, but let's just talk about
authenticity. Let's stop talking about that in general, yeah.
I mean, but let's talk about authenticity. And,
yeah.
I mean, you know, I got off on Bedford the other day, and I saw an authentic Williamsburg food tour.
Well, okay, so this is the reason I brought up the ramen thing with China is because everything is constantly evolving, right? And so, like, we've talked in years past about the idea of fusion as this, like, problematic, this, like, problem in the vernacular, right? That it's, like, this term that makes everybody's eyes roll, and yet it's very much something that's happening in the highest-end restaurant right now. But I think that, in the same way, you know, the idea of anything being this sort of staid thing that's done developing, and this is what it looks like when it's authentic, and this is what it looks like when it's inauthentic, is sort of problematic because it's constantly moving, it's constantly evolving. You know, like there was never, you know, there wasn't pork in Mexico until the Spanish came. You know, so it's a complicated idea.
Yeah, but
could authentic then be just more loosely be like you can trace back its roots and you can point to its evolution?
I don't know, I think people are looking for something, and again, this is a movie toy, but they want something real. Like, they want to feel...
What is that, though?
The things that excite me with a restaurant are places that have a story.
But don't you think that comes so much from the chef? I mean, what you're talking about, realness and authenticity, I feel like so often can just be sort of sprung from the earnestness of the people that are behind the scenes making it sing. You know, it's not necessarily this like encyclopedic, you know, rendering of a specific cuisine. It has heart.
I mean, I won't name names, but I know that there is one barbecue chef who opened up a barbecue restaurant because they thought it would be a good business.
Shots fired.
And when asked about the story, there was no story other than, well, I looked at the landscape and I thought it'd be a good business.
Right.
How's the barbecue?
Great barbecue. Fantastic barbecue.
Whoa.
I enjoyed it less.
Snacky Teen's blind item.
I enjoyed it less because there was no story.
You enjoyed it?
I know.
What if I had just brought it home and not told you where it's from? You're like, it's great barbecue.
I'm not saying it wasn't great barbecue. I'm not saying, and I've had it again since then. I think just overall, I just been like, I just wish there was something authentic or something real behind it. Other than just being like, you mastered the technique and you put out a product and it just feels like every other commodity business. There's no heart. There's no soul to it.
Right.
And it hurt.
It hurt.
Well, I mean,
it hurts. It stings. Stings my, to this
my, day. My heart hurts, but I don't know if that's relatable.
I don't know. I would disagree on that point of like, if it's good food, it's good food. You're not asking like the people at the food cart, like what's their story. You're just trying to get like a good meal. But I think from the authenticity standpoint is like, you want, I don't know. I mean, isn't like the idea of like for authentic, like, I'm not going to go to Japan anytime soon. So if I want to like try to experience something like that, and I know that there's an argument that you can't have the food unless you're there, but you're trying to create something or have some type of taste, or at the very least be transported by the meal and be like, oh, like, this is like, I want to experience what this culture is like. Like, we just went to eat Ethiopian food like a couple weeks ago, and it was great.
That stuff doesn't work well for mama.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll pose away. It was great while we were eating it. 24 hours later, it's a different story. Yeah, but yeah. It was this couple that this couple had been cooking in this place for 3 decades. They were from Ethiopia. They had come to where I was in Portland. They had come to Portland. They had opened up this place. It had been there for 3 years, and it was great. And it was like the flavors were super weird, and it was really spicy.
Right, which is that's amazing. And anything that can be transporting is special and important.
But
and,
you
know,
I guess that's,
but I guess to me, like, the reason I bring it up, which is, you know, I'm not being contrary. I agree. You know, like, I too, in my heart of hearts, like, I want to, you know, be taken to another place, or, you know, you know, have a deliverance in the food that I'm eating. But I do think that the problem comes in when we have this idea that if it's not that things that are ethnic are measured in their goodness by whether they're authentic and whether, you know, and we as outsiders decide what that yardstick looks like.
I mean, I agree with what you're saying on that.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, it's like when I say, like, I want to go, I mean, it's weird though, but sometimes I'll go eat Thai food and I, like, do not care if it's like authentic Thai food. It's just whatever the local Thai food place. But when you're going, I guess for me, and I know we just got off ramen, but to go back to ramen, when you're eating it, because the way that it is introduced and has been kind of sold, at least through the media and the press, whatever, it's like, this is something that you had not, these are flavors that you've not been able to have before, and now people are bringing them to you,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, wow, there's a whole new, right. What's that place in Austin? That's on 50th Street.
Ramen Tatsuya.
That is like,
oh yeah, Tatsuya.
That is like
amazing.
I had never tasted anything like that before.
Well,
I was gonna, in
the transporting restaurant thing, I actually was thinking about the last time that I saw you, and it was outside of Bunker.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
in Ridgewood, which is totally one of those places in New York, just completely, completely transporting, and I can't comment on whether or not it's authentic. I haven't been to Thailand. I haven't eaten that food. Yeah. You know, like, my yardstick is like pok pok.
Well, I mean, you know? If you want to talk about authentic Thai, I think he strives for authenticity.
Yeah. He's an anthropologist.
There's a place in Cathedral City outside of Palm Springs in a shopping mall called India Oven.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I swear is the best Indian food I've ever had. And I have brought people there who've been to India who, like, do not believe me that some place in some, like, Cathedral City, and they're like, this is like the best Indian food I've ever had.
It's the idea.
And it's like they're like, we took someone's mom, she's like, this takes me back to when I traveled there. And you're like, okay, so like maybe it's less authentic. Maybe it doesn't need to be authentic for it to be successful and good.
Sure.
But maybe what the new word should be like definitive or transportive or, you know, educational wise, and then if it's not that, then it could be totally great. Just don't make that claim as like.
I like that idea of education and food. I like that. I think that's.
And it's the idea
smart.
That you can travel around the world for $50 or $7 in one bite of food.
If you're paying $50 for ramen, like, you're not doing it right.
I think that he means, like, you know, you take the train up to Queens and you go and you eat. Yeah. You take the 7 all the way to the end. And you go around like. I really do think that there is something to be said, like, another place, and I know because I've been on the way out west, but like Jitlada out there, which is, it's an 800-page menu. The first 400 are just like whatever, your traditional Thai, and the other 400...
It's not 800.
Is it an 800-page menu?
It is 800.
It's not 800 pages.
No, 800 menu items, what did I say?
You said pages.
Oh, that's insane. Who would make an 800-page...
It's like the Book of the Dead.
Yeah, but it's 800 menu items, and it's just... And the second half is totally traditional Southwestern Thai food, like things like bone-in eel and spicy sauce, that you're just like, I've never heard of these things, I've never heard, like, had this food, and by eating it, like, I might not even like it, but you're just... learning about this culture in some strip mall in Hollywood, and that's great. And, and like, authentic or not, that's like what people eat, and you can try it, or you can stick to your, like, Pad C U or whatever.
Yeah,
you know, whatever.
Although, like, God bless it. Like, I love that stuff too. Like, I don't hook my nose down.
That also
stuff
does,
like,
not work well for Papa after 24 hours. It's so spicy.
All right, enough.
I would love it if we could shift gears away from your butthole and not to some other.
So one of the other culinary cultures that you said last year that was coming to the city was France and French cuisine. Yeah, you said it was coming.
Did it?
Lafayette, things like that.
Oh, that's right, Lafayette. Yeah.
I don't think it... I feel like if anything, you know, obviously the Nordic culture is still the prevailing new...
You know, I'm going to say, I feel like I just... I like that I say things and then you just hold me accountable for them a year later. I mean, like, you're the only people in my life who, like, would dare to hold me accountable for the obscene things that I say all the time. But I do think that... this is what I think. I think that more than any one particular cuisine, I think what I'm seeing more than anything is this sort of highly globalized kind of international pantry that the best chefs are really pulling from. So, like, if I was to say to you, like, what kind of restaurant is Estella? Like, what kind of food does it serve?
I couldn't.
Like, you couldn't say. I mean, it's sort of, he's, I think, Venezuelan, so... Ignacio Matos, so it's sort of, you know, there's a little bit of that, there's a little bit of Mediterranean, but it's like, it's global, for sure.
Yeah, it's a wine bar.
I think more than anything, I mean, I think the Nordic influence we're seeing a lot in presentation.
A lot in presentation.
And I think, you know, I do think that, you know, France had sort of a moment last year. I think that more than anything, I think we're sort of starting to break down the boundaries and say, like, if Thai chilies are going to make this thing sing, then Thai chilies should be in this dish, you know?
That was, like, 3 years ago, I think, when we had Bomb and White on, they had said, like global on a plate.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just kind of, like, a very, you know, simple prediction on their head. It was, like, what, it's kind of like once you go global, I mean, once you kind of know those things and once everything is an option, like... Why would you? I mean, do you think that maybe then, like, 3 years from now or 5 years from now, they're like, you'll see like a stark turn, like we're only cooking traditional, like Norwegian cuisine, and we will have no influence from anywhere else.
There's always that pendulum, right? Yeah. I mean, things swing in one direction, then they swing violently in the other one. You know, that's sort of how things go. I mean, we see that all the time. I mean, obviously there are other factors that affect this, but, you know, fine dining versus, you know, highly casual, mm-hmm. you know, environments. Of course, you know, things like economy and like political climate affect those things, but, you know, as things sort of, you know, go extremely, extremely casual, suddenly there's like this backlash and you want the fine dining again. And like, it just, things go in cycles like that. So I think maybe in a few years we'll start to see people, you know, kind of bearing down in the way that Andy Ricker does at Pock Pock in sort of an anthropological way and returning to a more, you know, specific way of cooking. Although, you know, it's hard to say that those things are hard and fast because at that time, when things start to sort of turn back in that direction, the entire foodscape will have changed dramatically forever and for always, you know? So it'll be a different world that we're cooking in and eating in.
Where do you think the New York dining scene is sitting right now between fine dining and, you know,
I definitely think that we're still on the sort of casual end of things, for sure. Although, I think that that has sort of reinvented itself.
Yeah.
I think, you know, when you look at, like, a sort of, you know, a hot restaurant, it's still, you know, the aesthetic is still very much no tablecloth, mm-hmm. Very sort of personal, idiosyncratic service.
No, I think service... I wish service could always be fine dining, or at least some level of better than comfort service.
I don't know. The best service that I have ever had was at Blue Hill at Stone Barns, actually, this past year. I think it was the best meal of my life.
It's a stunning meal.
I mean, I spent the first half of the day at a strip club and the second half of the day at Blue Hill Stone Barns.
You want to shout out the strip club? You want to shout it out?
I don't remember what it was called, Damien. No. I don't remember.
Hop on like the Pumps Stone Barns bus that they have?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's a direct shuttle. No, it was like my hooker high and low day. But it was really like a magnificent meal and beyond the food, which was, in your words, Greg, educational. You know, like they put the raw ingredient on the table while you're eating this highly refined version of it. So you can really get a sense of like where it comes from and what it looks like. And it's, you know, some people may have never seen like a rutabaga before. You know, it's educational in its raw form. But the service was so phenomenal, and it was really, it was like so personal, and it was formal in the sense that it was really high end service. Course. But you know, our servers interacted with us each in their own unique way. So you know, one person might have been sort of goofy, and then another one would be really nerd out, and then another one would be really formal. So I just love that. I think that you know what fine dining service looks like needs to sort of look like these are real people who are not necessarily just going by a rule book, bringing their own identities to it, and thereby sort of enriching it and making it all the more special.
I had the same experience at Bettany this year. Chef came out, presented the raw ingredients. It was a great time. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Moving on. All right, we'll do a few more trends from last year. Let's see. Do you still hate brunch?
I still hate brunch.
You know what?
Still
I'm with
hate
you.
Brunch.
I hate brunch.
I hate it. And my girlfriend has moved back and she loves brunch and we're about to hit a very, very interesting crossroads.
Wow. So what happens? How do you...
I don't know. I mean, I hate brunch for so many reasons now. For all the reasons I used to love it,
yeah,
I now hate it.
Well, you're growing up, darling.
Yeah, I know.
It's the worst. I cannot remember the last time I did brunch.
I have, I won't name names, but I have a dear friend who works for a chef.
This entire show is like all white label. It's like, yeah, we won't say anything about anyone, but fuck everything.
Well, that's the name of my spinoff show.
Yeah. Fuck everything with Jordana Rothman. Is that your hooker high and low show?
Yeah, that's right. Another dear friend of mine says that my memoir needs to be called Judgment Day, and that it's going to have a hologram on the cover with my thumb like waving like gladiator style up and down, which is actually a great idea.
That's
so
a really great idea.
Yeah. So yeah, no. I mean, we don't even need to
tread over about it.
I mean, it's just such a tired thing. But yeah. But I have a dear friend who works for a chef who was trying to get me in to check out the new brunch. You know. Offerings at a well-known restaurant, and I just kept politely putting her off, like, oh, I'm busy that day. Oh, yeah. I did. And then finally I just had to be like, here's the article that I wrote about the complete guide to hating brunch, and never ask me again.
Never, ever, ever ask me again. Did health in restaurants happen? We talked about ancient grains and things like that. I didn't see it. I saw a lot of fat.
What about Narcissa, though?
All right, let's talk about Narcissa.
Well, I'm saying for health in restaurants, I mean, you know, this is John Fraser is a chef who's really been a vegetable forward chef for many years.
Well, we could talk about vegetables.
And he and Narcissa, have you eaten there?
Not yet.
Well, I think it's fantastic. I really loved my meal there. I've been recommending it to everybody. And he treats vegetables very interesting. He does like a rotisserie bead, and he does like a carrot Wellington and carrot tempura fries, which, granted, not particularly healthy, but you know, he's bringing, it's a very rich palate to play with vegetables. You know, it's a shame that we're just sort of bludgeoning everyone with like fat and meat and potatoes.
I think Paulie Brent's doing like a $50 cauliflower head.
At Is the he? Elm.
Yeah.
Does he serve that with wheels of cheese?
I don't know, but I know that he's doing like giant. I mean, I love a giant vegetable large platter. It's great. The LA Chapter does a great raw vegetable.
Oh, well, actually, wasn't there a place? Isn't there a place in Philadelphia named Veg? Isn't there a? You guys are Philly boys.
Yeah.
Isn't there? So that's a.
I don't know. When I go down to Philly, I eat like cheese. I mean, I eat terrible.
I know you're a disgusting man.
I'm sorry. You have a recent road trip to Philly where you ate twice on the way to Zahara?
First of all, it's called Zahav.
Sorry.
Oh, okay, so now you've corrected and answered the question.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry. I was too busy getting my quip out. I think you stopped for a roast beef sandwich and a roast pork sandwich.
Well, if you want to out me, what I actually did was first I stopped for a root beer.
Okay.
Okay. Then I stopped
Where'd
for...
Where'd you get the root beer from?
Like a little
Weber's.
Did you know that soda's killing our nation slowly?
Well, I was so excited because we saw it on the side of the road and it was like so cute, and it was like a little drive up where you put the thing down and they come up to your table and they put the tray on your window, and I was like, oh, that's so great, it's so cute.
You just like
Instagram
pulled
photos.
A handkerchief off and like tied it on immediately.
Completely. Like I got like they everyone there was basically like they don't think it's cute. They're like, our Cisco delivery is coming in. And I'm like, oh my God, everyone look forward. I have to Insta this, like right now. So we ordered they have like their own homebrewed root beer, which I was like super psyched about. Thought it was going to be like really like sassafras-y. And actually it was just completely disgusting. Like basically just like high fructose corn syrup, like in a glass.
They're like, fuck you, here's your root beer.
Yeah. They were like, have a nice day at Jordana Rothman. So that sucked, but it was cute. And then, yeah, that's right, thumbs down. And then we went to John's Roast Pork, which it was so unbelievably good.
It's so good.
And it's like nestled between strip clubs. And I went in and I was like...
So you felt right at home. Did you bring the roast pork into the strip club? Like,
well, actually, if you know anything about me, you know that I read an etiquette column before going to the strip club to see how the times have changed since last time. I wanted to make sure that my tipping strategy was up to snuff.
What's considered a good tip?
It's still singles. Actually, okay. Things have not changed.
Yeah, not, yeah.
It's a single sum.
If it ain't broke...
Yeah. Right. Well, so John's Roast Pork, I was in there and I was eating this. Oh my God, it was so good. It was so insanely good. It was like completely a testament to like do one thing.
Do it well.
And do it well. And I was like, am I eating like world class porchetta or am I eating a disgusting sandwich in like the warm pink glow of a neon vagina?
You know,
like
both.
It's not, yeah, both. But I was in there and I was like, this needs to be an American classic for the beards.
Yeah.
And I was so psyched. I couldn't wait. I was going to like bring it to the committee and like tell them about it, this family. And then I looked on the wall and it was already an American classic. So yeah. I'm happy to see that.
Out of curiosity, how does that get designated?
Roast pork sandwich is the sleeper hit of Philadelphia. Everyone goes for cheesesteaks.
100% agree. 100% agree.
I like it, so good.
Like
so
Tony.
Oh. Whoa.
Yeah, sorry.
Tony Luke's roast pork.
Oh, and then I also ate fried chicken.
Oh, at Federal Donuts?
Yeah, and I ate some donuts, too. So then like, I cried in a corner, and then I met my friends
for
dinner.
So your five-hour trip to Philadelphia was very nice.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, that's
But for
a
the
lot.
James Beard, like, the Heritage one, like, I mean, how do those places, how do they get them? I mean, it's just...
Well, it's a different process. It's a different process than the Restaurant Chef Awards, meaning that, you know, people don't vote on those awards. It's more like by committee. But there's regional representatives across the country who communicate with judges who basically bring these places to the committee's attention. That's how they get on the radar.
Like the ones that won this year, like I know the one from in Oregon from McMinnville is just like a classic Italian joint that like everyone has been to.
Yeah.
Which is like the...
But it's so great. I mean, that's... For me, personally, that is my absolute favorite moment of the beards. I think that it's so... They do these videos, these like sort of... And it's so... It's so wonderful to see these. And they come out and they're just... They're with, you know, three generations
like
of their family.
Like when Princess Hot Chicken won.
Yeah.
And it was like three or four generations. And like, they're just like...
Who was the Texas steak that won this year?
Perini, I think.
Oh, my God. When he was giving a speech and his wife was crying.
Oh, my God. And then he put the medal on her. And everyone, there was not a dry seat in the house.
Oh, my God.
It was so nice.
He takes his hat off and puts the medal and like, here's the real person.
He was wearing like a 10-gallon hat.
And it's like,
it was very teary.
But I feel like it's not really politics behind this one. Just like, thank you for making our state great.
Well,
I mean, do you know what I'm saying? It's less like jockeying, more like,
well, because those are the places. I mean, those are you know, salt of the earth American places, and those are not necessarily rising onto the radar of the hot, you know, up-and-comer chef or the whatever. These are places that are, you know, but they're so much a part of the fiber and the backbone of what it means to eat in this country and eat well in this country. And
would you say that they're authentic?
Wow. I mean,
I'm serious.
I would say they're educational.
How could I even answer that question, Darren? You're just trolling me. I mean, it's like, these are...
He's not even waiting a year. He's like, earlier in this episode, you said, and I want to go back.
I mean, a lot of these places are serving immigrant communities. I mean, Sokolowski's in Cleveland, you know, is a Polish... It's a Polish restaurant that serves, like, chow line. Like, you get a cafeteria tray, and you get, like, pierogies.
I was drooling over all that food.
I ate it. I ate there, actually, in...
As good as it looks?
Like, in the fall. You know, yeah, it's culturally important food.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, look, but also I don't think those awards, whether or not they get them, it's nice, but I don't think it's not like going to stop them from doing with it. Like when I went to Arnold's, it's meat and three.
Well, I'll tell you this. I, you know, do you guys know Wayne Mueller, Louis Mueller Barbecue in Taylor, Texas? Amazing place. And I had the great pleasure of spending a day there in October and meeting Wayne and, you know, hearing his family history. And on the wall, I saw the American Classic, which they won a few years back when his father was still alive. And also on the wall, I saw a signed picture of Guy Fieri at doing Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives at the restaurant. And I was like, wow, these two things next to each other, you know, this is the depressing state of food, I guess. Like, and I said, which one brings you more business? And he was like, 100% Guy Fieri. Like, it's you know, the James Beard Award, it's like among the industry, so respected, so important, but like Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, say what you will about, you know, that douchebag, but like he's saved, I'm sure, many, you know, American champion food institutions. He's a champion of those places.
Yeah, I'm going to go controversial here. Hated his restaurant, totally fine with Guy Fieri for what he does for like those restaurants. Like when you, like from Darren, from your work on all the stuff you did with Food Network, when you would talk about what it would do for restaurants.
It's literally the next
guy. And you're just, and like, yes, we're in New York, and yes, like, we get to these things, and we live in this world, but like, we're talking like places that then people will travel 2-3 hours
to go
eat at, because Guy Fieri says, like, you can't, like, whatever his gel tip backward sunglass wearing, whatever. But I have to agree with you. It's like, he's probably doing more for those people than most.
That's what,
than most anybody.
And listen, not gel, it's schmaltz.
if Guy Fieri was not the host of Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, and like we never called it Triple D, and like we never knew that a man
who
like
calls Guy Fieri, Triple D,
everyone,
literally everyone.
What is he new?
I guess.
I mean,
Greg, welcome to your first show.
Hi, very nice to be here.
But if it wasn't, and if that show, let's just imagine a world in which Triple D was not called Triple D, and it was not on the Food Network, but instead it was on, you know,
PBS,
exactly, right, or something, and it
like
was
like America's classic like restaurants.
It would be this celebrate. It would be Mind of a Chef.
Yeah,
right.
It would be this like celebrated, because it's honoring the institutions, and it's right. You know, it's like
all the authentic restaurants across America.
Ugh, Darren.
American food ways. But let's talk. I actually wanted to say that I think we were talking about the beards earlier, and I do think.
Let's talk about the beards. Let's get into it. Can we first say, Chris Schoenberg, First We Feast.
Yeah.
Last year when we talked, I think he had just started.
Yeah. Well, yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
A little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think when I walked into the after party for the media ones and I saw the award around his neck, it took me a sec. I was like, amazing. Oh, he's wearing a James Beard Award. And I was like, that must mean he won.
What, did he borrow it?
Yeah.
Can I see this for a second? Instagram.
Hey, Francis, let me get one of those.
So I mean, Chris and I worked together for years, and he is not only a dear friend, but also a wonderful and talented writer and journalist and editor, and someone I could not be prouder to have shared many bylines with over the years. And he, when he got the nom for the award, we went to a dive bar in my neighborhood and drank whiskey and ate nachos for like 8 hours.
For the uninitiated, and, what did he get nominated for?
Right. He was for best group food blog. And so that's a journalism award, obviously. And when he was, I mean, even just that was a huge coup. And then, you know, I was out, I did not go to the broadcast awards, and I was having dinner with some friends, and I was following the Twitter stream, and it came up, and I couldn't, he beat Eater, you know, that's amazing. I mean, and it was amazing. And I stood up, and there was a shelf directly above my head, which I had noted as I sat down. I was like, now Jordana, don't go smashing your head on that shelf. And I stood up and it's like a cartoon. Like I saw stars in front of my face. I was like, like, you know, like really, really, really,
just James Beard medals,
really
just like dancing around.
Yeah.
Your head.
But it was like still too much. And I was so like disoriented, but I like ran out anyway. And Daniel's like yelling after me to like, make sure I don't have like some like fatal contusion, like Liam Neeson's wife style, you know?
Wow.
Cause it was, yeah, too soon.
Too soon.
Yeah. So I went outside and I just had this unbelievable emotional reaction. I was on the phone with Chris and we were like crying and screaming. And I'm just like, it's just so wonderful because I love, it's merit. Merit got, you know, awarded. And that it's so, not that the other candidates weren't meritorious, but, you know, it was so wonderful. And what he's done is really, he's brought this new, you know, really rigorous level of reporting and integrity to that space. And he deserves it. He absolutely deserves it.
And you know, a year
first year, where do you go from there?
You get more resources, you get investors, and you just build.
Yeah, I'm very proud of him. I'm very proud of him. And I think it was like I went to the after party at Mont Pesh just to see him, and it was like the top three hug of my life. Like the hug that we shared was like a hug for
the ages.
Yeah.
Shout out to Chris. Check out the site if you haven't.
Firstwefeast.com.
Yeah. Big year for women.
Yeah, there was a ton of diversity.
Shout out April Bloomfield. Shout out Naomi Pomeroy.
For sure. And I think just in general, I mean, I think the awards felt very personal to me this year. I felt that, like, you know, a lot of those acceptance speeches were, you know, they're obviously everyone knee-jerk thinks their team, but in some cases they had their team up there with them.
Yeah.
You know, they were behind them in this really wonderful way. And to the point earlier that we were talking about the American classics being like the tear jerky moment when he took the medal off.
Oh my God.
But there was another amazing moment, which fully had me bawling, which was the humanitarian of the year.
Oh yeah.
Award. And of course his name is completely blanking on me, but this guy who does this amazing work in Nepal, who has this insane backstory. He was like a crackhead and he was literally a crackhead. And he was like, do you OD on crack? Is that a...
Yes.
You OD on crack? Okay. So he was like hiding in a closet smoking crack and then was like extracted by like a SWAT team. And like, I mean, it's like, it's a very dark place that this guy comes from. And he turned it into this, I think he built like cooking schools in Nepal, and he's bought children out of sex slavery. And it's like completely mind blowing. I see next to John T. Edge. And I, like, turned to him with my jaw unhinged. And I was like, is this for real happening? Like, is this a real guy? It's amazing. Food can be an incredible vehicle for social change.
It's a basic need. You just thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
I mean, that and that story where it's like, it does. It's, like, educational. It's the hard hours. It is an equalizer. Like, if you put in the time and you, like, can play the game well and cook well and have the talent, you can rise to those things and actually make all the differences, which is great.
Can we shout out Garrett Oliver, too?
We should shout out Garrett Oliver,
11 years?
I'm not really sure exactly how long he was on it.
Like, he was not nominated 11 times, though.
That would imply.
That would, yes.
I would have taken that it was the first nomination.
I think he got nominated every year. I saw him dancing at the 11 Madison Park party. I mean, yeah. He was... Well deserved.
Sure.
Great guy. Amazing. He's an encyclopedia beer in his brain.
I mean, again, it's, you know, the fact that he's a great guy is fantastic for those who know him, but it's really about, you know, what his contribution was and has been
and
that he has left this indelible thumbprint on American brew history, and that's amazing. And because of him, you know, so many other things have been able to happen, and there's such a heightened awareness, and I think that's really important. So
yeah,
let's go back to women.
Okay,
let's get into women.
You want to kick it off? Women. I love women. That's my
not what I heard.
Hey-o.
I also love women.
I love women.
Yeah,
I am a woman also.
So obviously women in food this year has been a big topic, mostly because of the Time article, mostly because of the Cherry Bomb Jubilee Symposium. Cherry Bomb, shout out. They just got their own show.
Yeah, that's great.
On Heritage Radio.
And that's Julia Tershin. I actually met her.
Radio Cherry Bomb, check it out.
Radio Cherry Bomb. I am a big fan of Julia's, yeah. And I met her at the Cherry Bomb Jubilee, which is, as you know, a big festival or a big conference in support of women in food. And I saw her, and she's very recognizable. She's got a really distinctive look. And I saw her, and I was like, oh my God, that's her. And I went up to her, all nervous, introduced myself and tell her how much I love the work that she's produced. And she was like, oh, are you Jordana? And your boyfriend's Daniel Krieger? I follow him on Instagram. I was so excited. It was amazing.
And she goes, how was that root beer in Philly?
Yeah.
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 No.
Fine.
Thanks, guys.
But anyway, women showed really, really strongly at the Beards on Monday night, and you know, miles to go before we rest, but I think that it's a good
I know this question is going to be dumb before I ask it, but I will ask it anyway.
Do you feel that way about all your questions?
No. just when I'm on the show with you. Do you think there'll ever be a point where sexism and racism and things like that will be gone from the conversation of cooking and chefs and food?
I think that I mean, I can say what I would hope that what would happen is that, you know, in time, it's not going to be the, you know, the best female chef or the best African-American chef or, you know, that we won't need those qualifiers. And these are just that these are just people are at the top of the industry, irrespective of their race or their gender or their sexual orientation
or cooking or anything along those lines.
I would hope that, you know, we would get to that point. You know, I would like to think that we're starting to. I mean, I would like to think that just simply blowing open the dialogue is an important step in that direction. Do I know, you know, when that's going to be or what that's going to look like? I don't know. And I also, you know, I will say I think that Cherry Bomb, I mean, Cherry Bomb was wonderful. I couldn't have been more impressed with what Carrie pulled off. And logistically, it was fantastic, and I think everyone had a great time and would agree. I think that as we continue along this road, my instinct is that I don't think it should that the conversation about women in food should always just be women talking about women in food. I think that you know, wonderful as Cherry Bomb was, and it was I was tweeting for Cherry Bomb that day, and I found all the men that were there, and it was like three dudes.
And Greg Fumiter was there.
Greg from Eater, Phil Baltz, Ken Friedman was there actually. He was there, and so I took a picture of all the guys that I found, and you know,
like meat market.
I think that it's sort of like, you know, we don't want to, you don't want to perpetuate the us versus them thing, right? You
no,
know,
of
it's
course.
Like there's you know, there is this coven, like, you know, sort of, well, maybe that's not the word, but there's definitely a sisterhood. There's definitely
wow, of all the words.
There's definitely a sisterhood, you know, that's developing around this, but I think for real progress to happen, there need to be men in the conversation. Men need to be part of the conversation too, because we all need to sort of equalize. We need to find our footing together and become comfortable.
But do you think that
grappling
with
this?
But do you think, like, for any type of, like, making a stance move, that it needs to kind of blow, like a pendulum, blow all the way in one side and then come swing back, where it's like, it should be established, there should be those things, there should be young women who can see that they can sit at the top of the game just as much, and then can come back and sit alongside the peers. It's not like, you know, sitting, like, the token, like, top two women in the field. It's like, here's a million different positions that women can hold. You can either be the top, you can be a sous chef, you can be the best maitre d', you can do a long time, and then the conversation becomes more integrated.
I see that reasoning. Yeah, I definitely see that.
But
no, I mean, I agree. I think, but I just think that there's we're not there yet. You know, I think we're only just starting to really, really have honest conversations about this. I mean, I think this has sort of been, you know, kind of a you know, bit of a skeleton in the closet of the food world for a while, and now.
Do you think it's weird that there are no female porters, busboys, dishwashers? I've never seen one. I've never met one. And like that's the entry level to a lot of the culinary world. You start there at the bottom and you work your way up after so many years.
Yeah, I don't really. I'm not the person to answer that question about the culture of the kitchen in that way. I tend to think that if you're looking to move up the line, you probably start on, like, you know, garde manger or something. You know.
What are some of the issues that and we don't have to get into them, but what are some of the issues that you think are when things start to get dusted up that are, like, really just the bigger things that need to be attacked and focused on?
Well, I mean, you know, one thing that comes up for me when we have this conversation, you know, obviously I'm not a chef, but I'm on the other side of the business, and I think that the sort of tokenism, to, you know, borrow your phrase, and sort of just like extreme gender rolling happens on the journalism side too. I mean, I think that women, you know, when it's going to be a story about, you know, Dave Chang and Aziz Ansari and James Murphy going and getting wasted in Tokyo for 3 days, it's not going to be a woman that gets that story, that gets that assignment. Yeah. There's a definite, you know, there is this sort of like Hunter S. Thompson, gonzo, macho thing happening in food writing as well. And that's what people are reading and buying, and that's what's winning beards. And
well, you should, whenever you write any stories about men, you should now start to insert what they're wearing.
Because for every female thing,
Greg, dude, wait, why do you say that?
Because when most stories are written about women,
oh, I see.
They always saying. Like you'll never in a story about men, you'll never have a comment on appearance besides like hungover or bedraggled. But for women, they'll always at some point insert what they're wearing. So like the counter thing, it's like, you know, Aziz showed up wearing like ripped jeans and like a nice fitting t-shirt. Top. Yeah, yeah, and it looks like he just had like a fresh shave.
Yeah, but if we could talk about another form of media, most of TV shows for cooking are made by women. Hmm. You know, like a lot of people who run production companies sit at the top, women.
Did you guys read that story on Grub Street the other day about duties?
No, like poopy?
No, it was about dude foodies.
Duties,
and they called them duties.
Who calls them duties?
Who?
It was the headline. The headline was
no, but who?
And what is a well?
Okay. Oh, wait. So okay,
did you ever hear that phrase before you read that article?
No. It was like, coined. It's New York Magazine. They coined.
Is it
you
like
know?
Bronies?
No. Are you not following the basic portmanteau? It's a dude foodie. It's a
no.
Dude-y.
I got it. And bronies are guys who like Little Pony.
Right. So I mean, in that way, they have it in common because it's like so dudes and it's a portmanteau.
What is a duty?
Well, like I guess I would say that like you're a duty, Darren, and Greg, you're a duty. It's like it's
not,
a
not cool.
Yeah, no, keep going. No, keep going. Yeah, keep going. The mic is yours, Jordana.
So it's a guy, by New York Magazine's definition, it's a guy who loves food and who is really into, like, project cooking. So it's not like they just, like, they like, make a meal, but, like, they own the sous vide, they hack their own sous vide machine, or they're going to do, you know, dig the pit in the backyard and do the roast pig, or, you know, they're going to make their own pasta, you know, that kind of thing. It's, like, it's project cooking, and so...
As opposed to what other type of cooking?
Like... throwing together something to eat on a Tuesday.
Got it.
Kind of cooking.
Okay. I'm struggling with this.
I've never been really bummed about something that we've talked about, but the duty thing is...
Is this like a... Is it Yeah, double...
double
yeah.
Down.
But is this like a tongue-in-cheek point and case?
It's
like,
a tongue... Of course. Yeah, of course. Just it's a joke, obviously. But I do think that there is that kind of guy. I mean, my friend Damian Higgins, who's been on your show before, is definitely that kind of guy.
Shout out to Damian. Shout out to him wherever he is in the world.
Yeah.
But I definitely think that there is that kind of man who gets sort of so fixated on the kind of mechanics of cooking and kind of approaches it in the way that like a gearhead, you know, approaches
food. Oh, I see.
But so that's cool. But you know, that I bring this up in
and
this
would you
conversation
call women
because,
that foodies?
Well, I bring this up because the story was definitely controversial because there was, you know, Adam Rappaport was quoted in there, you know, is saying it's not like when women cook and they're nurturing, or you know, we follow along gender lines. You know, like she's in the corner making the salad, and I'm you know cutting the meat against the grain. Whatever.
He's also
it is.
Chewing on his shoe as well, right?
At this point, he is. Yeah, yeah. But you know, so I bring it up because it's you know it's another it's a sort of another chance for us to be like, well, is this how we think about the women who are doing our cooking, like they're just nurturers. And
I put it this way, and maybe it's because of my relationship with you, and obviously my girlfriend. Like, I see no line. Like, I never think about chefs and like with sexism or things like that.
I mean, I would think you would be ignoring the world around you, but I mean, I'm just serious.
Because what you just said, I know what you're saying, because what you just said is like people who say like they're colorblind, you know, like it's like we don't have to pretend that we're all exactly the same.
No.
Yeah.
But to there's texture is allowed.
Yeah.
And differences are allowed. It's just that, you know, the differences shouldn't be the thing that's keeping you, you know, that's keeping us from
rising. I mean,
but
like we had a mother who, I mean, dad did not do cooking and mom like chopped up the steaks, like mm-hmm. you know, cut down the chicken. Like right now, she's making hamburgers and like on the grill, and like she like has dad clean the grill, so and like move it, like, and it's very much like her domain, and she is depth with like from the salads to the meats to whatever to the pies and everything. Like that's one way to say it. Like, but I would never ever have described. Not that I don't think my mom is wonderful, but I would never have described her cooking as nurturing. Like, I would have never, like...
What? Right. So she smacked you upside the face?
No, she just cooked great
great meals. Same thing with our grandmother too.
There was a lot of love and nurturing in those meals.
Greg, it's Mother's Day. No, for God's sake.
No, but I'm saying from what you just said in the article where it's like women described as nurturing, like she just was a great cook, took care of the family, and then dad sometimes made like liver and beans every morning.
Well, come on. I mean, like, my father didn't cook that much either. My mother did most of the cooking, but, you know, I think the trouble is to say women cook as nurturers and men cook, you know, as gearheads.
Providers.
Or whatever it is.
Hunter-gatherers.
Right. But it's like, you can be a nurturer and be a man, and you can be, you know, a meathead and be a woman. It doesn't, it should not fall on those gender lines in that way. And whether or not just because it occasionally does in some cases doesn't mean that that's the exception that proves the rule. I mean, it's just, we need to get away from that knee-jerk, you know, soft versus hard garbage. We're better than that.
So who would be the dream? So like the Chang, Aziz, Murphy trip to Tokyo. What would be like the dream?
The women?
No. Well, two questions. The dream women, because it's got to go, the pendulum's got to go the other way.
The dream women.
The dream women. And what country? And then who would be the middle, which would be the men and the women and the country?
All right, so you need a comedian, a musician, and a chef, and then a journalist. You're the journalist.
I'm the journalist, obviously.
And
if it couldn't be me... No, it's just me.
It's just me.
It's just me.
So the three women.
Okay.
And it doesn't have to fall on those...
Okay, so a comedian, a chef, and a musician.
I would say maybe either Amy Schumer.
I was just going to say Amy Schumer.
Amy Schumer.
Right, so Amy Schumer or Sarah Silverman.
Amy Sedaris. Because she eats.
Oh my God, and she'd be so good.
She would
she's
be amazing.
Had the cupcake book.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, but Amy's she's a little older.
Ageism. Oh my God. The whole place just lit on fire.
I would love to go to Tokyo with you, Amy. Sorry.
All right. So
you know she's one of the 20 that listens.
Right. Yeah.
So let's go with Amy Schumer.
Yeah.
We both thought of her first,
and she's kind of like on my radar right now.
She's on TV. Her show's funny. Yeah. She
just did a whole bit about a girl named Jordana. So
did you see her skit on Finger Blaster Chicken Fingers?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Okay, so the
they're getting finger blasted.
So the musician,
well, one and then two,
the female musician.
Let's go back. Let's start with let's do chef. And we'll do a think.
The chef. I mean, I feel like it's going to be April Bloomfield, Ashley Christian, Gabrielle who?
Gershon.
Oh, I would think like Ashley Christensen or April would be really awesome to do that kind of trip with.
Yeah.
I think Ashley Christensen would be really, really fun out of Raleigh.
Yeah.
The Pool's Diner. I think she would be
also
a blast.
April, like, you could also get in the into the field with April and she would...
Yeah.
She's done this. So, okay. And the musician, I'd like a St. Vincent type character.
But I mean, how would that mix with the group that we put
together? I mean, you'd have to... It'd have to be a meat eater, which I don't know anyone's preference of. That because
does it have to be meat eater? That's the entire point we just made. Doesn't you don't have to necessarily.
No, but I'm saying for it to be like a full on adventure of like we'll eat anything that comes our way.
So St. Vincent, Amy Schumer, and
April Bloomfield. I feel like because like I feel like all the chefs. I mean, they were celebrities. Trip were celebrities in their own right.
Let's just say either April Bloomfield or Ashley Christensen, whomever has the open schedule. Yeah. And as to the country, I'd say Asia's off the table because James Murphy already took care of Japan, and I feel like then we're just copying it.
Yeah.
So I'm inclined to say like maybe like what's another really vast and misunderstood food culture, like Mexico.
Yeah, that they went to Mexico City.
I'm going to Mexico City in 2 days, actually.
Ooh.
Okay, so then. What's the mix?
I still don't feel set on a musician choice.
Okay.
I don't think it's... Maybe like a Solange? Oh, yeah. Carrie Brownson.
Oh.
There we go.
All right.
There we go.
Yeah.
There's a ghost in the room that just suggested.
Okay. So let's do April Bloomfield, Carrie Brownson, and Amy Schumer. With Jordana Rothman in Mexico City.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
That's great.
I feel like there's a definite possibility that this ends with like us all dying in a hotel room for because we took bad drugs.
Okay,
or something.
So then let's take the ultimate is that you pair the men's trip And right. the one trip, what's that city?
Are you looking at two guys?
Oh,
two
so girls? So those three women those, come together and those three men.
Men come together. I would say take them on an eating tour of West Africa. No.
What?
No.
No. You just got back from Africa, so you're like, yeah, you're, that's not, I don't know why I pronounce it that way, but like Africa. Africa.
What about maybe like one of the lesser explored Germany or like a European country?
What if we just like took them to like Estonia?
Oh my god.
as deep in the deep as we could.
I mean, South America. All I'm gonna say, you know,
we
Chile,
could do Peru.
Peru.
We could go on like a ceviche tour.
Ooh,
I know it's controversial, but you could also take them to like Moscow or Russia.
Well,
or,
you know, I do want to say that the way that James Murphy story came about, which was GQ, right?
Yeah.
Was that they were messing around one night talking about it. Or on Twitter or something, and someone like, you know, was like, let's do it, and they actually sent them. So if anyone wants to send me to Mexico City
with
those three women, I'll go with any women, honestly.
Yeah.
I'll go with
but I think it would
chicks,
be...
I'll go with dudes.
But I mean, you would also have to, I mean, would you have to be conscious of writing the story to make sure that it was like, it was just about, I mean, that it wasn't like a gender specific story or written as a total counterpoint to like the other story?
I mean, of course, like, I would have to see what happened, but, I mean, that's part of it, right? Like, that, listen, I read that story, too, and I had a great time reading it,
yeah.
And it won awards, and, you know, it's fantastic,
it's party porn.
But this is, what is that story? You know, like, what is the story? Are we all, it's like this Hunter S. Thompson thing where we're all gonna go and just get, like, super, super fucked up, and then we're gonna write about how fucked up we were and how, like, you know, these things, but it's like, there's something else to say about it, right? Like, why can't I take, you know, why couldn't it be the woman from Bar Bulanat? Bar Bulanat, she's also the Taim. Admoni, whatever, Edat. The Israeli chef. Why couldn't she and I go to Israel or, you know, or travel in Lebanon or something and, like, you know, talk about that? I mean, that's like, that's a food store. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's rich.
Go to Palestine.
Wah, wah.
All right, so I know we're getting to the end. Let's talk about. I think we have time for probably two more topics. Most unexpected trend that you're loving right now, and most unexpected trend you're hating right now.
I don't know. What are you loving right now?
I am loving. I'll tell you where I'm loving to eat right now.
Yeah.
I'm loving the Cleveland.
Oh, I haven't been yet.
And I'll tell you why I love it. And I feel this way sort of with... I mean, I know it's not a fair comparison, but Contra as well. It's just these restaurants where you're going in. It's great food. It's great wine. It's like 50 or 60 bucks.
Yeah.
It feels comfortable. It's not this just whole like... It's I feel like it's what I... And I'm to blame as much as anyone else. It's just like I got away from like what I loved about going out to eat, which was just going to these places and then not being this whole like...
Yeah.
4-hour ordeal that's like... $200. It's just like, I'm just gonna go out and I can bring anyone there. We can just go and have a bite and it's good food and good wine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel for a while like I couldn't, you know, it was either like you were done eating in 15 minutes or you had been there for the entire night.
Sure. Yeah, that sounds good. I like that too. That's what I'm excited
about. Oh, come on. Come on.
You always put me on the spot with this stuff, and I
no,
don't.
No. It can't be always put you on the spot
because you've done it for 5 years. Yeah. So I should just be prepared.
You know what you're.
I know.
That's a reoccurring trend on this.
I know.
All right, let's talk about. We can talk about Mexican food in the city, fresh tortillas, things like that.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm blanking on the name of that restaurant that opened up.
Presidente.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I am seeing like every time I turn around now, I feel like it's like fresh masa and tortillas, which is. Hands down been the biggest complaint of what I think is like really makes crappy Mexican food in New York is that you get these rubbery tortillas, and honestly that's 60% of the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like it's almost
is
like about
people talking about tortillas.
Yeah.
Wow. I actually ate at Cafe El Presidente.
That's good.
Which I ate there right when it opened actually. And
it's like
yeah
it's like a Mexican Italy sort of.
Kind of. Yeah. It's really cute in there. You know, I think that even still, and I gave this, the whole thing with tortillas is that they need to stay warm when you make corn yeah. tortillas. When you make them, they can't cool down and then be warmed up again. That's when you eat a tortilla and it's sort of brittle and falling apart in your hand. That's why.
Yeah.
And there's mechanisms for that, but we don't have to get into that. But, you know, but you can't do that. I know, I see. Aaron Sanchez.
Shout out to Aaron Sanchez at the bar.
He's been hanging out, bringing beers back and forth this whole time. So, good for you, Aaron Sanchez. Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day.
Aaron Sanchez. Look at that. Look at that chain. Anyway, so I think that even still at Cafe El Presidente, and I even said this then, like, that there's a, you could just tell that they had probably, was probably a few hours from them. They were pulled off of the, of the tortilla. They have a tortilla machine basically from the time that they were being served because they were still brittle. But you know, it's not a, it's kind of like an a la minute thing. I mean, that the best tortillas are the ones that are just, not, I wouldn't say immediately right off the comal or the griddle, but they have a few minutes to steam in their own heat, so they become more elastic. But that's what makes them good. And if they're not made like that, then they're just not good. I mean, it's kind of like the like pizza theory that like even a bad tortilla can still be like satisfying if it's like stuffed with whatever. But like it's gonna fall apart, and it's just that you eat it really quickly and you kind of forget, you know, whatever. But that's it. If you're not making them fresh, they're not good.
They're not good.
So, you know, the experience of going to Tortilla Nixtamal in Queens and eating, you know, something, eating a taco there, you're like, wow. And then when you buy the tortillas and you bring them home and you put them in the refrigerator and you heat them up 2 days later, they're just not good. And they're never going to be good.
No. Sorry. It ain't going
to
happen.
You can't hack it. But there's a lot of places that are you know, starting to engage on this level. So Cafe El Presidente is one. Obviously, Mission Cantina, Danny Bowen is doing it. I am still struggling with those tortillas. They're still not for me where they need to be, but you know,
but he's acknowledged that
it's an art.
He's working on it. He's and I remember when April Bloomfield opened that
Taco
Salvation Tacos in Pod 39, that hotel. Yeah. You know, she got it. I mean, she got spanked by Pete Wells and for the tortillas, and she, you know, she knows. And it's like, it presents a challenge for a restaurant kitchen, and that's the whole, you know, what Alex Stupak does at Empeyon, and they mostly do flour tortillas there, and they're magnificent. You know, one of the things that he has said many times is that, you know, tacos aren't meant to be plated in a kitchen and brought out into the dining room and eaten like that, because it's almost like, you know, the greatest sushi bars in the world, where they put the thing in front of you and you eat the thing and then you get the next thing put in front of you.
Right.
You eat it immediately, and that's when it's at its best. It's dying. It's dying as you're marching it through the restaurant.
Yeah.
Death of the tortilla. Tortilla death march.
The tortilla death march, I think, yeah. I like that you self-edited, and I really respect you for that.
Thank you. so you don't have a trend for us? I got to provide the trend? You got nothing you like right now that you're seeing in food?
Well, what I would say is, because it's, I don't, this is the thing, like, nothing is really presenting itself in a restaurant where I'm like, that's the hot new thing. It's not like when carrots showed up everywhere and I was like, wow, everyone's fucking with carrots. Like, it's not, to me, at the moment, there isn't.
Can that be your autobiography?
Yeah, fuck everyone, with carrots.
Everyone's fucks, fucking with carrots.
Fucks with carrots.
Yeah.
.com.
That's a good Instagram tag or handle. Fucks with carrots.
I feel like that's like a webcam girl already has that.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow! Can you imagine if they had like a duty strip club?
But I'm going to say something. I'm going to say you're still talking about duties, I'm going to say something important, and you're talking about duties. But so anyway, my point is that like nothing is leaping out at me that feels like this is the thing that you're going to be seeing on plates right now. But what I do think is that there's a lot more engagement around, intellectual engagement around food and topics around food. So, you know, Cherry Bomb was a great example of that, where it was like, there's this conversation that we need to have, and we need to like rally around this thing. It was like a thought exercise, and everyone got together and we played around with these things, and we held the jewel in our hands and looked at it from all these different angles, and it was valuable. And now, you know, Will Goddard is doing the same thing with the Welcome Conference, which is a hospitality conference, which is happening on the 17th in New York City. And of course, there's still, you know, the MAD Symposium in Copenhagen, and there's the Miss America in Mexico City, and there's all of these opportunities to really start digging in. And I think that what I'm seeing more than anything, if I was going to say a trend, is that it's not really enough to just, you know, open a restaurant and you know, just kind of swing wildly, you know, at the air. It just, food should have, you know, a point of view, and should incite conversation. And that's what I'm seeing. That's what I think is important right now.
I would agree. I mean, also, and there's no way to ignore that climate is going to become a very, very large factor into it. I mean, there was an article that came out recently that a lot of the crops, because of this winter, didn't really come through, or they're getting a late start, and that's going to drive food prices or things become less.
Look at the lime situation right now.
That's right.
I mean, whoever thought about lime? Literally, everyone just took limes for granted. And now they're...
Yeah, I have to say, I got so annoyed. So this weekend is the Manhattan Cocktail Classic in New York, and I know it's not on our agenda, so we won't talk about it, but I just want to say, I got a press release, and you know, I get about 1,000 emails a day, like between 800 and 1,000 emails. So most of it's like batch delete, like sorry publicist that like calls me Jordan.
So you got Jordan Roddy. Press emails. You didn't want to?
Oh yeah. I mean, it just happens, whatever. So anyway, I got this one that was a contest for the world's largest caipirinha cocktail that they were like hand muddling during MCC. And don't worry, because all the proceeds for the ticket sales, however much they cost, are benefiting American lime producers. And I wrote them back, which is again rare. I usually like batch delete this stuff. I wrote them back and I said, are you getting limes from some American producer? Like, how is this working? And she's like, oh no, we're getting them from Manhattan Fruit Exchange. And I was like, where does Manhattan Fruit Exchange get them? And she's like, Mexico. And it's just so absurd to me. Like, really? You think this is the best use of one of the most precious resources in food right now? A stunt? The world's largest caipirinha, and you're benefiting American lime producers? Come on. It's so absurd. I mean, when are people going to pull their fucking heads out of their asses and do something valuable? It's garbage.
The guy in Nepal? Right?
The guy in Nepal. All
right, so what's your least favorite food trend right now?
Talking about food trends.
All right, fair enough. let's talk restaurants, because we talked about some last year. Where you been eating? What are you looking forward to that's opening?
We mentioned it earlier, but I'm really into Narciso right now, mm-hmm. the John Fraser restaurant, really into what he's doing with vegetables. I don't remember if Estella was open this time last year, it was about to open. That's emerged. I mean, I've said this 1,000 times over, but like it's emerged as sort of my favorite new restaurant for sure. I've been very, very excited by what's going on there.
Can we self-plug and say that on Tuesday?
Yes.
We're doing our first barbecue blowout of the season with Estella.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
and
good.
Turing Machine DJ, which has become a nice trend or
Brooklyn Brewery,
tradition.
Things like that. You can go to just search barbecue blowout Estella. I don't even have the URL.
Yeah, where can we buy tickets?
Online, through Eventbrite. It's BBQ Blowout May 2014.eventbrite.com.
Yeah.
We used to have a website, but we gave up on that a long time ago.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
But when you're only updating it
and
four
then I'm
times
very
a year.
I'm actually very excited. In terms of openings, I'm excited about I always mess up this name, but it's Batard, but I always call it Bastardo for some reason,
wow.
For obvious reasons, I think. But Batard is the in the Cortone space with John Winterman, and I think that could be a really interesting. They're opening very soon, like in just a few weeks, and I'm really excited to see what they have working up there. And also Barquetta, it's not Dave Pasternak. Who is that? It's a seafood place.
It is.
It's Dave Pasternak. Yeah, that place.
Ghost with the information coming in. I'm excited for Sarah Simmons' place, the new fried chicken place.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know what's a crazy story? Speaking of total ghost stories.
Hit me.
I am a friend of Sarah Simmons, and she was asking me about that space before she signed the lease, and I was like, oh, yeah, you know, I've been in there. And I said, before you do any construction, let's, like, take all the furniture out and roller skate in the place. Like when it's empty, because you're always going to have this memory, like before your restaurant opened, before you blew up, like we roller skated in this place. And that's like this special memory that we'll always have. And she was down for it. And she was in the space and she was like clearing it out. She was clearing out all of the, you know, debris from the old restaurant. And she texted me a photo of a pair of roller skates that she just found in the restaurant.
Whoa.
How crazy is that?
Did you go roller skating with those roller skates?
Not yet, but like my name's on those for sure.
If they're the same size as your feet.
It's magic.
It's magic.
Although I will say, like, I have this idea in my head of like how great I'd look in like, you know, knee-high socks and like, you know, little shorts and like, you know, like a sweatband around my head and like pigtails, maybe like roller skating, but actually it would probably be like, you know, watching like a toddler take their very first tentative steps, you know, I'd be like really shaky. So I don't know if you guys should be there is my point.
I didn't even realize you had invited us.
Well, thank you.
Well, I don't want you to witness this. I think this is like a girl's own.
Watching people roller skate is like brunch. I'm busy. Ooh.
What?
Never mind. And last thing, what are you up to this year?
I got a big thing on the horizon.
Oh, we can't talk about
that. is, yeah.
First
I
off,
would
you
say
have your hand in many different pots, so we can just talk about the things. Pies.
My thumb, specifically. Not my whole hand.
I like hands and pots.
It's thumbs and pies.
I still like hands and pots.
Well, I'm working on a big project, which I'm really excited about. Give me, like, a few weeks, and we can talk a little bit more about it.
How about a whole year? How about we talk about it next year?
You know, just, like, bring me on in a few weeks.
Great.
It's fine.
Great.
Talk all about that. Otherwise, like, I'm just kind of plugging away with my freelance stuff. I just wrote a story that I'm really, really psyched about that ran recently on Mad Feed, which is the Rene Redzepi blog, companion blog to the Mad Symposium in Copenhagen. And it was such a good challenge for me. It was about restaurant dynasties and families, people who were born into the restaurant business and what that means. And if it's a burden or an honor or a little bit of both. So
I wonder if, is it less of a burden now that food's become such a big part of pop culture?
It's a very good question. That's not a topic that we got into, yeah. But I would say, probably. I mean, culturally, it's just a different thing now to sort of get into the restaurant business. It's a more, you know.
Like, you can be a fucking rock star, yeah. And run, like, a dynasty restaurant.
There's just, I think, more of a general, like, a broader understanding of, like, this is valuable, and right. So I'm going to do this. You know, it's
yeah. Like, and it's not just, like, blue-collar convict shit like that anymore. It's, again, like.
Yeah.
What? That's what people used to think about.
I hear
people,
you.
People can't see you nodding in agreement. They just hear the pause and think that you're disagreeing.
I wasn't pausing. I was not pausing. There was no pause.
No pause.
Anyway, but, you know, so more of that. More of that. I just, great. I'm looking for sort of, you know, I like to do those kind of stories where I can really dig in.
Are you finding that, I mean, obviously you have, like, lots of constraints, but, like, the longer form, deeper research type of pieces?
That's what I'm taking right now. I mean, so awesome. I do some of the shorter stuff, you know, to fill the larder, but the stuff that I'm really, you know, promoting that I'm excited about tends to be more intensive, idea-driven.
Are you going to Mads this year? Are you going to go to Copenhagen?
No.
So last question, since you have the mic. What story do you want to pitch that someone should pay you to write?
Twins in Mexico City with Jordana Rothman.
No, it has to be girls.
No, it doesn't. We're the dream team. Three of us.
I think I would like to write about that issue that we were talking about earlier. The idea of this, you know, the moving target that is authentic food. I think that's a really interesting idea, and I'd like to explore that.
Yeah. I think that would be awesome. That means that you have to go travel to those places, then come back to hear for the people related to him.
Can I ask?
Sounds terrible.
What country... Or where would you go to try and find authenticity?
I mean, sort of anywhere, right? But I mean, a country where I'd like to explore the food culture, which I don't know that much about. I mean, I would love to do, like, North Africa. Like, that, like, spice pantry is really interesting to me. Greg is making this wide Jesus stance right now because we were just talking about Africa. You were in West Africa. It's different.
True.
Fine.
It's a big country.
I'd love to do that trip. I mean, I think that those are really, that's a really another food culture with, like, really complex kind of mind-blowing spicing that you really need to be inside of to really understand. I'd love to explore that.
The nuances.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe, oh shit, we've talked a lot.
We have.
And I unfortunately don't think you made any predictions that I can call you on next year.
What about the conferences and all of the intellectual dialogue around food? I mean,
let's already try happened. And hope that, like, you can write that article with Carrie and our chef.
Carrie, April, and Amy.
I'll give you guys a finder's fee.
That'd be amazing.
That'd be great.
Just bring us a take home plate when you fly home from your last meal. Like, here's the doggy bag.
One person we forgot to shout out was Lucky Peach, who took home 5 James Beard Awards.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Crazy.
Well, that was part of our conversation last year.
That was part of our conversation last year. How they changed the food game. And just shout out to them.
I mean, and they also wrote that huge article on masa,
yeah,
the street food thing, which.
There's just what Lucky Peach has done is provide. I think they've just provided a space for that kind of content. It's raised the bar, I think, across the board. I mean, like, people are looking for meatier, more
nice,
depth-driven content than they were before. And at the same time, they also want, like, top 10 lists of, like, the best hot dogs or whatever. So hopefully, like, we ensnare them with the hot dogs and come for the hot dogs, stay for the, you know, dense story about restaurant family.
On the origin of, like, a hot dog case.
Come for the hot dog, right. Stay for the carrot origin story.
Stay for the expose about the meatpacking plant.
Jordana, thank you again for joining us.
Do you want to shout out your social media, whatnots?
Oh, yes. I'm at Jordana Rothman on Twitter and Instagram, and you should follow me on both. Although, I'm really more active on Twitter. That's more.
Really?
Yeah.
I never use Twitter. I just use Instagram. I don't know.
That's how you want to end the show?
No. Well, I can't thank you enough. We have a really, really awesome summer coming up, I guess, starting on Tuesday. Hopefully you'll come. Hopefully you'll both come.
Ghosts in the room. But I shout out to DJ Diesel Boy wherever he may not be.
But we're gonna end the show on a positive summer note with one of our favorite bands. This is Hold Steady.
Wait, one last question. Summer vegetable you're looking forward to eating?
Don't say ramps.
Peaches. Well, that's not a vegetable, but I'm so excited for peaches. It's close. Fair enough.
And do you like a peach that's like a little bit underripe?
This is what I want. I want a peach that is so, like, disgustingly overripe that it's, like, pornographically, like, its flesh is pressing up against the fuzzy skin, and you know that it's about to burst, and it's gonna, like, get all over your face. I want a peach that it would be obscene to eat in public. I want a peach that I wouldn't eat in front of my mom.
Play that song, Darren.
All right.
Your promises circle around.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.